Well, joining us now is someone to whom we'll be speaking often in the coming days, retired General Thomas Rame. He's one of the military consultants that we and our colleagues here at NPR News will turn to help explain the military situation as it develops. General Rame commanded the 1st Infantry Division during the Gulf War. He's currently Vice President of the Association of the U.S. Army, and he joins us on the phone from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks very much for being with us, General.
My pleasure to be here.
If you all have any questions about the state of readiness in the Gulf, give us a call, 800-989-TALK. The email address again, totn@npr.org. And General, I think you've been listening to part of our discussion about the Kurds and the Shia and the Sunnis.
Yes, I have.
How does that factor into the military equation?
Neil, this is not going to factor in initially. It is my belief that if the president unleashes the armed forces to execute the war plan, the first and decisive mission is to neutralize and take out the elements of the Iraqi armed forces to include his Republican Guard. That period, which will come in the post-conflict piece of this thing, is going to become an issue because, obviously, the military forces have got to maintain security once the Iraqi army has been dealt with until you can get the post-conflict reconstruction piece underway.
But are U.S. forces trained in the different languages? Are there specialists in civil affairs ready to take up these duties?
The combatant units obviously have been trained because of Bosnia, because of Kosovo, because of duty in the Sinai. Everyone in the armed forces today are not unfamiliar with some form of humanitarian operations and peacekeeping. I think it's safe for me to say that they do not individually possess the language skills of the degree that you would like, but they have civil affairs and language proficient personnel with them to help them through all this, as we did in Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm. Now, as going back to the general military situation, as we look ahead to that 8 p.m. Eastern Time deadline,
correct?
Iraqi officials have said they might not wait for the U.S. to attack, as the president said, at a time of his own choosing.
That's interesting. He tried this in the Gulf War at Kafji, which was not a bold move. Well, it was sort of a bold move, but it wasn't a very smart move. I am fairly confident that the U.S. forces that have moved up, the ground forces have got their game face on. They've practiced, they have rehearsed, they've done their rock drills, they've done their sand table drills. They're confident that their commanders know exactly what they want them to do. And I think should the Iraqi forces move to do something preemptorily, it would be a big strategic mistake.
Yet, from their point of view, you have at this moment most of the forces they're going to face. They're massed in one place. Wouldn't it be easier to, if you're going to be able to do anything at all to attack them offensively, wouldn't now be the best time?
I think any time that the Iraqis would choose to attack the American forces, it would be, in my view, would be a big mistake. These guys are ready. They're not in a very... This is a full heavy armored division, a full air mobile division that's spread out, a brigade of British soldiers that are spread out, and this is a bunch of dedicated U.S. Marines, and they're not all standing in one spot waiting for Saddam to initiate something. As they move up, they are fully aware that they are being prepared and set. If he does something preemptorily, they're going to meet it and they're going to handle it. But I have the full confidence that they'll be ready to handle it. I don't think they're vulnerable at all.
We're speaking with NPR military consultant General Thomas Rame, who commanded the 1st Infantry Division during Desert Storm, and we're ready to take your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let's go to a question from a caller, and
sure.
John is on the line with us from Salt Lake City.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, John.
I'll take my answer off the air when I'm done. My question is, what actions is the U.S. Government prepared to take to keep the Turks from invading northern Iraq to eliminate their conflict with the Kurds?
John, I'm not ducking your question. I simply give you, I don't know. I'm sure that... Our Secretary of State General Powell and others are working with the Turks But I don't know the detail of the politically how they're dealing with that issue with the Turks and the Kurds in the northern place where we do not have U.S. forces.
Okay. Well, you were a commander, as we mentioned, during Desert Storm. And
correct.
Though it seems like the troops now must feel as if they've been waiting forever, you had to wait even longer. What is this waiting time like?
This waiting time is not unusual. Soldiers know that to get deployed and to get into position, that he whoever gets there first is going to wait the longest. He who deploys in the most recent is going to wait the least. However, all those young people know that it takes time to marshal the forces. They'll feel more comfortable as the strength grows of other forces and other units being there. They know what the president has asked them to do. They're confident in their ability. They're used to waiting. They'll be able to respond when the president asks them to do so. As they quit waiting and started moving up, all these anxieties move forward in their mind, and they heard the commanders have briefed them on what the president said. They understand the ultimatum that was laid down, and they know that when they were ordered out of their areas and they were moved up north toward the border, that they know that things are different. And I believe that probably waiting is on a shorter timeline than it was before.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from
sure.
Adam Bridge. Before the last Gulf War, we were all told about how huge and horrible the Iraqi army was and how there were going to be terrible casualties. Now I hear just the opposite, and I'm worried that now we're not taking them seriously enough. I can imagine, he writes, mined roads, tons of literal pitfalls. What's up?
First of all, the media and a lot of political guys don't take the Iraqis seriously, okay? The American soldiers are out there. They know that this guy's got a large number of tanks. They know he's got a large number of infantry. He's got a large number of artillery. They know he's got Republican guards. But he also knows that psychologically, the Iraqi starts at a great disadvantage. An American soldier knows exactly what he faces. He's not overconfident. He does not believe that they're going to just get up and walk in. He's willing to accept that. But I don't think that they're so overconfident that Saddam should make a mistake of thinking that they're not ready and they're not prepared. I think that the troops on the ground have got a hell of a lot more reality grasp on this thing than what you're reading in the newspaper and what political analysts are telling you.
Let's go now to Bill, who's on the line with us from Seattle.
General, I'm a former Army man, and I was trained at Fort Dix, New Jersey, using the M1 rifle in the Korean conflict. And what is the basic weapon of our infantryman as he moves into Iraq, and what is the basic weapon of the Iraqi infantrymen whom we'll be fighting against?
Basic individual weapon of your mechanized infantry and your light infantry today are the M16 rifle. It is a vastly improved M16 rifle from that we used in the Vietnam War. Many of the individuals also wear a sidearm 45. Every rifle squad has a light saw machine gun. And all this infantry in the 3rd Infantry Division are all backed up with a chain gun, 35mm on a Bradley, a coaxial mounted machine gun, and tow launcher. So they're armed to the teeth, and they're proficient in their weapons.
And what about the Iraqi infantryman? What's he armed with, please?
The Iraqi, basically what you see is the AK-47, which is the weapon of choice that the Soviets and the Chinese developed. It has been forwarded to the Iraqi army. It's in great abundance in their army. Their anti-tank weaponry focuses around within their infantry of the RPG.
Rocket-propelled grenade.
Rocket-propelled grenade launchers, and some... some of them have tanks with them in some quantity.
Bill,
this is very helpful, General. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Bill. And General Raim, thank you for being with us today.
It's my real pleasure. I would leave you with a thought that I would not worry about the American soldiers. They're ready, and they'll do what the president asked them to do.
Well, General Raim, I expect we'll be speaking with you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Listening to General Thomas Raim, who is a military consultant to NPR. Again, the deadline expires 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned to this NPR station for the latest on the situation in Iraq. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.